Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Encounters with the Archdruid is a 1971 work of narrative nonfiction by John McPhee. It is structured around three extended encounters between environmentalist David Brower and men who represent powerful forces of development and extraction, a mineral engineer, a resort developer, and a federal reclamation official. Rather than arguing from an abstract distance, McPhee places readers inside conversations, hikes, and travel scenes where competing ideas about wilderness, economic use, and public responsibility are tested in real settings. The book is not a conventional polemic. It is a carefully observed portrait of ideological conflict in the American environmental movement. Its lasting importance comes from the way it captures a historical turning point. When preservationist thinking collided with large-scale development and the language of resource management was still being defined, McPhee's method makes the book useful both as environmental history and as an example of literary journalism. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, David Brower as the central force shaping the book's environmental argument. Although the book includes three different opponents, its organizing intelligence is David Brower, the Sierra Club leader whose fierce preservationism gives the narrative its moral and intellectual tension. McPhee presents Brower not as a neutral spokesman for nature, but as a committed activist whose identity is inseparable from conflict. His view that wilderness has value beyond human calculation stands in direct opposition to the practical, economic, and managerial reasoning of the men he meets. That makes Brower more than a subject of biography. He becomes a lens through which McPhee examines the environmental movement itself, including its idealism, its impatience with compromise, and its dependence on strong personalities. The book is therefore as much about the making of environmental advocacy as it is about specific conservation battles. Readers see how personal conviction, institutional leadership, and public controversy can merge into one political force. Secondly, three encounters that stage the core conflict between preservation and development, the book is built from three separate encounters, each of which dramatizes a different version of the same larger dispute. In one section, Brower meets a mineral engineer who sees wilderness as land that may contain valuable resources. In another, he confronts a resort developer whose plans reflect the commercial logic of landscape transformation. In the third, he faces a federal reclamation official whose worldview is tied to dams, water control, and large public works. This structure matters because McPhee avoids reducing environmental conflict to one simple enemy. Instead, he shows that development arrives in different forms, each with its own rationale and legitimacy. Mining, tourism, and federal engineering may look unrelated, yet all raise the question of whether the natural world should be preserved for its own sake or adapted to human need. The book gains force from the fact that these debates are not settled in theory. They unfold in real terrain where the physical environment itself becomes part of the argument. Thirdly, McPhee's literary journalism turns reporting into a dramatic form of analysis. One of the book's most distinctive features is McPhee's method. He reports carefully and lets readers hear the opposing positions rather than summarizing them from a distance. At the same time, he shapes the material with a novelist's sense of scene, pacing, and contrast. This combination gives the book unusual authority because it is neither purely argumentative nor merely descriptive. The factual grounding keeps the work credible, while the narrative structure reveals how ideology operates in conversation, movement, and setting. McPhee does not force agreement. He constructs situations in which readers can observe how each participant thinks. That is especially effective in environmental writing, where abstract claims about value often become clearer only when attached to specific places and decisions. The book is a strong example of literary journalism because it uses form to deepen understanding. The result is a work that feels immediate and intellectually balanced, even though its subject is deeply contested. Fourthly, wilderness as sacred value versus land as usable resource. The book's central intellectual issue is the competing meaning of wilderness. For Brower, wilderness has an intrinsic value that does not depend on profitability, utility, or future development plans. For his adversaries, land must be judged through use, access, and measurable benefit to society. McPhee does not flatten these positions into slogans. He shows that each side has a coherent moral logic. Preservation can appear uncompromising, even absolutist, because it resists the idea that every landscape should be converted into something useful. Development can appear responsible, because it insists that societies need minerals, roads, water systems, and places to live and work. The power of the book lies in making that tension legible without resolving it too easily. In that sense, it anticipates later discussions of wise use and environmental trade-offs. Readers come away with a clearer sense that environmental debate is not only about science or policy, but about competing definitions of value. Lastly, an enduring portrait of an era in American environmental politics beyond its immediate conflicts. the book preserves a historical moment in the rise of modern environmental consciousness. Brouwer was a major figure in conservation politics, and McPhee's portrait helped fix his reputation as the Archdruid, a title that suggests charisma, authority, and a kind of spiritual absolutism. The book matters because it records how environmentalism moved from a relatively specialized cause into a broader public struggle over dams, mines, forests, and scenic landscapes. It also captures the human dimension of that movement's strong personalities, institutional disputes, and the costs of refusing compromise. This makes the book valuable not only to readers interested in nature writing, but also to those interested in political history, activism, and the rhetoric of public debate. Its lasting appeal comes from the fact that it documents an argument that remains current. Questions about preservation, extraction, and development are still unresolved, and McPhee shows how deeply those questions are tied to character, place, and institutional power. In conclusion, Encounters with the Archdruid is best suited for readers who want more than a general environmental primer. It will appeal to those interested in American conservation history, literary journalism, political conflict, and the moral language of land use. The book offers practical intellectual benefits by showing how environmental disputes are shaped by personality, institutional power, and conflicting definitions of the public good. It also helps readers understand why debates over wilderness are rarely just technical. They are often arguments about value, identity, and responsibility. What sets the book apart from many nonfiction works on environmental issues is McPhee's refusal to simplify. He does not write as an advocate delivering a thesis from a podium. Instead, he creates a field of confrontation in which different positions remain visible and intelligible. That gives the book durability. It reads as a historical document of the environmental movement, but also as a model of how serious nonfiction can hold competing truths in view without losing narrative clarity. For readers who want a concise but deeply textured view of conservation controversy, it remains one of the most distinctive books in the genre. If you would like to support John McPhee, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.